Recordings are started.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the council call on the 3rd of September. And on the call, we have Brett Fawcett, Donna Austin, Jonathan Robinson, James Bladel, U.S. Karen, Volker Greiman, and I do not yet see Thomas Ritter. Thomas, have you? Yes, I do see Thomas on the Adobe. Thank you. We have Phil Corwin, Susan Kawaguchi, Brian Winterfell, Heather Forrest, Tony Holmes, Osvaldo Nova. Are you on the call? I do not see him yet. Maria Maciel, Amar El Sadar, David Cake, are you on the call? I don't see David either. Edward Morris has sent his apologies. He cannot be on, and he has given his proxy to, I will tell you in a second. Avery Doria has sent her apologies. Edward has given his proxy to Marilia Maciel. Avery Doria has sent her apologies and given her proxy to Stephanie Perrin. Stephanie Perrin, are you on the call yet? I do not see Stephanie.
Yes,
Stephanie,
yes,
on
I am.
Adobe Connect. Thank you. Carlos Gutierrez, Olivier Cretin Leblanc, Mason Cole, and for staff we have David Olive, Marika Koenig, Julie Hedlund, Lars Hoffman, Barry Cobb, Mary Wong, and myself, Glenn DeSangeli. Thank you, Jonathan. Over to you. Sorry, and Steve Chen.
Thanks, Glenn. And hello, everyone. Welcome to today's GNSO Council call. You will have seen the agenda. And for those of you that are in the Northern Hemisphere, I have taken a summer break. And I guess to some extent, we all took a little bit of a break in that we didn't have an August meeting. So welcome back after a while. It would be good if we could resize that agenda that slightly in the Adobe Connect room, please. It's a little small. Thank you. That's perfect. Great. So you'll see that in front of you, and it's by now it should be to most of you a familiar format. We start off under item one. We've had the roll call, and we then take some updates to statements of interest, and we have one from Donna Austin. Donna, I don't know if you want to say anything about that. I mean, clearly there's a link provided. Feel free to make any comment you would like to at this stage.
Thanks, Jonathan. Donna Austin. The change relates to the recent acquisition by Newstar of Bombora Technologies, my former employer. So I'm now working for Newstar. So that's the change. Thanks.
Thanks, Donna. Useful to know, and thank you for being diligent about updating that. I guess it's a useful reminder to everyone to keep your statements of interest current. It may be just that you want to click on it and check that it does accurately reflect your current position. Unfortunately, we've managed to fall behind on the minutes a little, for which I will take responsibility. I'll catch up on those shortly, and we'll post those minutes. Of course, you all have access to the recordings and transcripts from the calls in any event if you do need to check anything. I think typically we'd move on to item two at this stage and just check off the ongoing and running action list. Much of what is on that list currently is either covered on the main agenda or has been completed. So as you look through it, we've got work on the Dublin meeting, and the latest version now looks at confirming or suggesting possible topics for discussion in key meetings. There's been a little bit of discussion on that on the mailing list, so that's useful. It's always helpful to either get positions from counsellors that have come up through their respective groups and to discuss those. I guess the one thing I would say in this respect is that we should recognise the role of the council, and the council's got, in terms of suggesting those topics, they shouldn't be just another avenue to cover work that's adequately covered through our own groups or constituencies, but rather recognising the broader GNSO and specific council role in dealing with those. So that's the only sort of point I've put on that, but it's very useful to get some active contribution and discussion about those and how we can make those sessions productive. I mean, we're essentially in a privileged position to get some good airtime with key people, and it's worth utilizing that effectively. And so to the extent that you can help do that, that's great. On enhancing ICANN accountability, that's clearly out. The major report's out for public comment, and we'll come to that as an item under the agenda later on anyway. There's a dedicated spot, as there has been for the last half dozen council meetings or so. The next live item is live but open, is waiting to hear a further update on the work NGPC letter that we received, although there's some active work relating to the curative rights, which we'll come on to later, but there's no update, as far as I'm aware, on this particular item on the outstanding PDP recommendations. As far as the GAC communique work is concerned, we completed that and submitted that and have had receipt of that acknowledged. I guess there's a question mark there as to whether we do anything more than that. Now, we know that's been received. We've had the acknowledgement of receipt. We could follow up and say, you know, ask for whether that was useful or not, or we could simply go through another cycle and process the GAC report in the same way coming out of the Dublin meeting. And then this may be a topic. It's probably worth actually thinking about it off the top of my head here. This is probably one thing, and maybe one or more of you from either staff or councillors can keep me honest on this one, and it's really something we could touch on with the board and just ask them for any immediate feedback. This wasn't specifically a board suggestion as such. It was something that Bruce, in his individual capacity, raised with us at our council development session back in LA, but nevertheless, it's a useful topic. So I see a couple of check marks from Amar and Carlos. That's good. So let's make sure we get that as one item. It needn't take more than 5 to 15 minutes of our time with the board, but it's worth checking, getting some feedback on that. There's various items that are completed here. The letter's gone off to the GAC with regard to being more coordinated and effective on working on work on country and territory names, making sure we don't sort of work in separate silos there. The other items you see below there on the preliminary issue report on GTLD registration services, the ESAC. But a new item here, which is making sure that we keep close to the timing of the GNSO liaison to the GAC, that we review that and the effectiveness of that, and are aware of the budget cycle as well in terms of potentially another year's funding. But I think we'll need to be aware of that. I'm just noticing Mary's comment in the chat saying, wasn't this at least mentioned to the board? Yes, I think here we're going back to the GNSO communication on the GAC communique. Yes, it has, but it would be good to get some feedback on it. So it's not, which certainly wouldn't have come from out of the blue, there's no doubt about that, but it would be interesting to get their feedback or thoughts on that in any event. We have for formal approval the timing for the council election, chair election. We've done our appointments of experts for review of IDN guidelines, and thanks to those of you who contributed to the final email discussion on that and the sort of pragmatic approach we took. And then we've written the communication on the facilitated PDP. There is an open item here, which I think was raised by Avery and or David Cake, relating to whether or not this work for cooperation with the IETF, between the GSO Council and IETF. But I think since we haven't got either Avery or David, there's probably not much more to be said about that. We'll leave that open and talk about that either on this or in future. And then on the curative rights protection for IGOs and INGOs, down at the bottom of page 2, Philip Corwin is due to report back to us later in this meeting as part of the main agenda item. Oh, David, good. I see you there. Feel free to come in then if you'd like to talk about this, if there's any development on this collaboration with IETF. Otherwise, come back to us on this. I'll pause to see if your hand goes up.
The short answer is there has been no change on this issue, so we don't need to talk about it this meeting. Nothing has changed since the last meeting.
Okay. Thanks, David.
The only one thing is it looks like the .onion RFC is going to go through. So if anyone's specifically interested in that, we could talk about it, but nothing specific about the ongoing situation.
James, go ahead.
Other thing, it looks at this stage as if the RFC to reserve.onion is going to go through. It's not sort of signed and delivered yet, but if anyone has any interest in that specific top-level domain, that we can talk about it. But I don't think it discussed before. I don't think anyone has any specific interest. And in terms of, you know, discussing how we do ongoing cooperation between the two, there hasn't been any specific update. I think we can blame it for this meeting.
Thanks, David. Got a hand up from James Blaisdell, which may be a follow-on from this anyway. So go ahead, James.
Thanks, Jonathan and David. James speaking. And I think I raised this last time as well. But, you know, while I think it's worthwhile discussing just a general collaboration and being generically aware of what's going on in the IETF, I think specifically to keep a close coordination or close eye on the issue of the development or the discussion of development of the RDAP platform and protocol within IETF, and how that or any changes to the underlying technical and operational protocols of WHOIS can affect the run-up to this expected PDP on next-generation registry directory services, because I feel like the two groups are working very hard and very well-intentioned, but not necessarily in a coordinated fashion. And I just wanted to ask David if there were any updates or specific discussions or accomplishments in that area that might impact the launch of that PDP on next generation directory services.
I just want to say I'm not currently aware of any, but I'd be happy to look in and report it to the council mailing list.
That'd be great, thanks.
Okay, so that sounds like a minor development there. Perhaps we can capture that in the action items and just make sure that if we are to do any more, that's recorded and we can track that. And I noticed that Ammo has put a very useful point regarding previous point I was discussing, which is the review of the GNSO liaison to the GAC. And since as you'll be aware, this is the work of the GAC GNSO consultation group, and so that is the genesis of it. It may be that we get the initial suggestions, give that as a piece of work to that GNSO GAC consultation group, and get them to come back with any suggestions, and even possibly to go so far as to review the function or at least provide guidance on that. So I think that feels like a good suggestion. Are there any concerns or issues with that? I know the consultation group is due to meet again very shortly. I think it's next week. So that could be useful for them to discuss that and come back with some suggestions. Okay, well, let's pick that up in the consultation group and update the council, unless anyone has any reservations about that, and the group can discuss whether it either is in a position to undertake the review or suggest to the council how that review, you know, some parameters or issues around that review, can come back on that. Good. Well, that completes the review of the open action items. Of course, you're also provided with a thorough summary of the ongoing projects, and the link is in the agenda in order to be able to do that. Are there any comments or questions about that project list and or the action list in general for that? Is up on the screen in front of you, and it's actually a very handy and effective document now with all the color coding showing where we are in the different phases of the work and so on. All right, seeing none, I think I'll move us on to the consent agenda. Okay, so sorry about the silence there. Right, so on the consent agenda, then there are a couple of points. Can we get the agenda full size again, please? There are two items on the consent agenda. And the one is to approve the adoption of the timeline for the election of the next GNSO Council Chair, which you've seen previously. And the second is on to approve the transmission of recommendations report to the ICANN Board, following the Council's recommendations that the Board adopt the final report. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that although there's nothing materially different in that from the final report, this is really just approving the transmission. There's a technical breach here in that we haven't seen those recommendations come to the council list 24 hours before. I thought about whether we could simply waive that requirement, but it's a technical point that there's no particular benefit to doing so. It's not going to speed up the implementation of this. So I think what we'll do, just to be strictly correct, is withdraw that up again at the next meeting when you've had the requisite 24 hours minimum to see that document. So really, if we could just record then that item 3.2 is being withdrawn from the agenda, and the consent agenda is really now 3.1, the adoption of the timeline for the election of the council chair. With that understanding, I'll call for a vote on the consent agenda, And does can I get an indication of anyone who is not happy with the item 3.1 remaining on the consent agenda? Anyone who would like to abstain from voting on the consent agenda? Anyone who would like to vote against that item on the consent agenda? Or the consent agenda in as a whole, only containing the one item? So, Glenn, if you could record that all those present are in favor of the consent agenda, which for the record is item 3.1, the adoption of the timeline for the GNSO Council Chair.
Thank you, Jonathan. I will.
Thanks, Glenn. Next item, item 4, is an opportunity to discuss the state of where we are with the preliminary issue report on the new GTLD subsequent procedures. We've got that issue report is now out for public comment. It went out on the 31st of August, a couple of days ago. And to provide us with an update of the status quo and the prospective timelines of that, I think we've got Steve Chan staff around. Just checking that Steve is on. I don't see him amongst the hosts, but
I'm here, Jonathan.
Okay, Steve, good. Well, why don't you go ahead and bring us up to date, and then we can have a discussion on that.
Sure. Let me just go ahead and post the link to the preliminary issue report in the chat module. And so this this agenda item is really about the length of the public comment period, but I wanted to take a moment just to talk about and provide a little background and context around the report. Because that might be worth taking into account in the discussions on the length of the public comment period. So the issue report is in part about providing the council, as well as the wider community, enough information to determine whether the PDP is actually warranted. But it's also about providing, if and when there is a PDP, sufficient background information, suggestions on how to organize work, what subjects may warrant prioritization, what topics or subjects may be more operationally oriented, et cetera, so that when the PDP does start, the working group can get off and running and sort of have equal information about the topics and subjects. So the issue report is, you know, generally intended to set the scope, but I think a better way to look at this one is that it's more of a baseline or a foundation that will help the PDP working group to start off and running. And so that for those that have taken a look at the report, they'll notice that it's it's rather long, as an understatement. So each of the subjects that the discussion group had identified have been broken down into background and analysis of the issue, and a determination of or at least a preliminary determination of whether or not staff has determined or thinks that policy development may be warranted for that particular subject. So just wanted to provide a little context, and so the detail in the report is hopefully to prevent efficiency gains downstream. And I just want to talk about the it's broken into five preliminary groupings. There's 38 subjects, so each of them have that breakdown I was mentioning, the background and the analysis. Some of the subjects are more foundational, like whether or not the program itself should even continue. Some subjects are in regards to possibly new topics or new policy development, like creating different TLD types, and then the accompanying variable fees that possibly may result. Some subjects have perhaps separate policy development efforts, such as IGO, INGOs, and RPMs. And then another one that a subject I want to draw attention to is closed generics, which is pertinent to item 5 on the agenda. And then also related to that subject is also global public interest, which is related to item 5, but it's also possibly beyond the scope of a PDP on new GTLDs. And I also want to note there's actually a separate effort related to global public interest related to ICANN's strategic plan. So just a little background on the report itself, why it's so long. And so moving on to the actual public comment length period, right now it's set to 40 days, which is really the default or the minimum. What that does is it results in a close date just a few days before people start traveling to ICANN 54. And as Avery has pointed out, although she's not on the call, it's actually, you know, it's not necessarily considered ideal to have something, the public comment period closing right before the ICANN meeting. But I also wanted to point out that public comment periods that are longer than the 40-day minimum are not really necessarily rare. So, for instance, the Next Generation GTLD Registration Directive Services Preliminary Issue Report, that one is actually a shade under 60 days. And as well, public comment periods have been customized to fit around certain milestones or, in particular, ICANN meetings. So with that in mind, I just want to run through a couple scenarios that the council can consider and to possibly help with discussion. So if we stay with the 40-day public comment period, that would result in a 10 October public comment close date, and then assuming 30 days for the public comment summary analysis and finalization of the issue report, that would result in the 9 November delivery of the final report, which coincides with the 9 November document and motions deadline for the November council meeting. So the second scenario I want to talk about is if there is a 60-day public comment period, that would result in a 30 October public comment close date, which is 1 week after the ICANN meeting. And that would then result in a 29 November final report, which is prior to the 7 December document in motion deadline. And I know I'm rattling off a lot of dates, and I'll get this into the chat module in a second so you guys can stare at it. But the final scenario I want to talk about is a 67-day public comment period, which results in a 6 November close of the public comment period, which is 2 weeks after the ICANN meeting, which I think is something that Avery had hoped for. And that results in a 6 December final report, which is before the 7 December document motion deadline. And so I just picked some dates, and obviously the council could choose a different public comment period, but I just wanted to provide some scenarios that could give you an illustration of how it would be impacted. And I also wanted to note that the assumption is that the final report and the public comment summary could be accomplished in 30 days, and that could obviously be impacted by substantial public comment or substantial changes to the report. And so once again, those are just some scenarios to open up the discussion. And so unless there's questions, I'll get those scenarios into the chat pod and otherwise hand it over to Jonathan to moderate discussion. And I know there are opinions on both sides of this issue, so I think he'll talk about process in terms of if the council does want to change the public comment period, how that can be accomplished. So back over to you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Steve. A couple of remarks before we open up the discussion then. First of all, I think that's pretty clear. I mean, we, in effect, one key factor, although as you said, the scenarios are quite flexible, but given the kind of example scenarios you talked about, we're either considering the final report, our November meeting or our December meeting, and then there's a couple of issues around the Dublin meeting, whether that comes out a week before the public comment period closes a week before the Dublin meeting or not, approximately a week. From a council point of view, we can review this and we can form an opinion on it. I think what's important, though, is our view is not necessarily a determination. The report's published with a standard 40-day comment period. Providing no one does anything about that, unless staff take a view of their own, that 40-day comment period will stay. If the council and or others make significant representations about that, it's, I guess, really the prerogative of staff as to whether they modify that or not. But clearly they're going to take direction from the soundings they're given. So the council is not making a determinant decision right now. We are feeding into the process as an influential body, should we even want to go that far. It may be that we just air our views amongst each other, and it may be that we have sufficient diversity of views that it's clear that the council doesn't have a view as such. I guess if we were to try and form a council view, we would probably need to take a vote on it as to whether or not the public comment period was extended. Now, we don't have a motion as such, so it's an interesting position. I mean, so really, there's some slight process hiccups. I think we could probably, via a vote, take a position on it, but that's slightly difficult since we don't. There's not a motion as such. So unless somebody from staff corrects me or anyone else with a better view of the process, that's my understanding. The council could potentially make some input, or it could be made via our respective groups. And it may be useful to hear where the different groups stand. I know we've had a little bit of dialogue line, and there's quite some different views. Some are in favor of having more time to consider a large report and spending other time on it. Others have talked about things like the fact that this is a relatively small part in a long process, and we should get this first part of the process underway and complete as soon as possible. So, any thoughts or comments? I noticed that Amma's made the point that if necessary, we could vote on this between council meetings. And first, with his finger on the trigger, is Brian Winterfeld. So, go ahead.
Hi, Jonathan. I'm Brian Winterfeld for the Intellectual Property Constituency. As Steve noted, this is quite a lengthy report and quite an important topic. I do think the IPC would be in support of a longer comment period for this, extending from the typical 40-day period to the 60-day period. We think this is especially important, kind of looking at the timing for the Dublin meeting. I think we all talked about this, and I believe Avery referenced this as well, where we're all sort of getting ready for the meeting, and then we're at the meeting, and then we're decompressing and trying to catch up with our other responsibilities when we get back. And so we think it would be ideal to have the closing date push back to just give us a little bit more time once we get back from the meeting to get our comments together. But of course, we're open to hear what other councillors and other constituencies think as well. But that's we want to just sort of put that thought forward.
Thanks, Brian. I just wouldn't mind the fact here for us to make sure we're clear on. If it was 60 days, the public comment closes on the 30th of October, which is how long after the Dublin meeting closes? It is only 1 week after the meeting closes. So it would require to essentially, but I would imagine the point is that comment can be worked on in part during the course of the public meeting.
That's right. The idea is that we'd have the meeting to work on and talk about our comments and then have them completed. Frankly, the 67-day period would probably be even better that Steve put forward to give us the 2 weeks after the meeting. But I think certainly we're erring on the side of more time, but we are respectful of the fact that other people may feel the need to have the comment period be shorter. So that's why we're trying to balance our request.
Thanks, Brian. Let's hear from others in the line then. Philip Corwin next.
Thank you, Jonathan. Philip, for the record, and speaking on behalf of the BC, we've taken an informal sounding, and there's a pretty strong consensus for 60 days, which is what we discussed. I don't think we'd have any objection for 67, and there's a number of factors. One, this is a very lengthy report on a very important topics, and it comes at a time when the community is somewhat overwhelmed on transition and accountability. It had looked like those comment periods were closing next week, but with the the board CCWG call that took place last night and the possibility of a face-to-face in L.A. On accountability later this month, that's going to continue to consume a lot of attention. Second, extending the comment period would give folks a chance to engage in both formal and informal discussions on this topic in Dublin and submit better informed comments. Third, the only effect would be to delay the council consideration by 1 month, and in fact, I think the council would have more opportunity to focus on this in a December discussion, because I think November will probably be dealing with a lot of the after effects of Dublin. And finally, we're talking about this leading to a PDP and a second round, which won't start until 2017 or 2018. So having the effect of a one-month delay or in council consideration is very minor in that overall context. So thank you for your consideration of those comments.
Those are clear points, and just to remind Brian and yourself to now drop your hands having spoken. There's an interesting suggestion that Brett's made. We could, and I think this is probably useful practical point, so if you could think about that, is that eventually we can discuss this, make up our points clear now, and we, in terms of putting it a council position out on this, if we see fit to do so, we could easily process this at the next, at the meeting later in September, and then I think that my sense is that would be, while staff aren't obliged to follow that, if the council had a motion that was passed to extend the public comment to, let's say, for argument's sake, 60 days, and that was passed on at the later September meeting, it would be hard for staff not to respond to that. So that feels like a very practical suggestion. So just bear that in mind when you make your comments now, that we have a mechanism potentially to deal with that that's been sensibly suggested by Brett, and nevertheless it's useful for us all to hear each other's views, either of our own or representing the different groups or constituencies we derive from. Go ahead, Volker.
Thank you, Jonathan. I think you described the perfect way forward. I agree this is a very lengthy report, and there's a lot of discussion that will have to follow from it. So in-depth analysis of whether this report contains any birth defects that might hamper or hinder the discussion later on is important. I'm not sure if we actually need that much time, because the report is not dealing with an entirely new subject. Everyone, every councillor, the entire community has already had a chance to look at the first round of new details unfolding, and therefore this builds upon that. This is just a follow-on on the first round to see what needs to be improved for the second round, what needs to be changed. So 40 days may very well be enough even for that in-depth analysis. I'm sure that there's different opinions on that, and I think we should have that discussion because it's an important topic. But I wouldn't say that we as a council should at this time decide on whether we need more time before the discussion has taken place in the different constituencies and within the communities. We should look at this, just like you said, at our next meeting and then decide upon based upon what the community tells us.
Thanks, Volker. That's a slightly different spin on it, but on the same point. It is a good point. I was thinking purely with my process hat on, but you're right, there's another dimension to it, and that is that we take formal, not only would we have a position to be able to then vote on or not, we would be getting direct from our different constituencies and groups as to whether they needed more time in any case. So that's, just to make it clear, though, if, for example, the council came out with a view that that 40 days was sufficient, that's not to say the public comment won't be extended at staff's discretion in any event if another group, for example, the GAC, felt very strongly about this. So just to be clear, like I said at the outset, we don't determine this. We can influence it. And my opinion is that if it came out and said 60 days or 67 for that matter, staff would be hard-pressed not to respond to that. But if we say stick to 40, it's not guaranteed we do. Olivier.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Olivier Clapin-Leblanc speaking on behalf of the ALAC. And the ALAC has discussed the length of the public comment period and the process during its last monthly call. And the preference of the ALAC, given that the report is rather long, it's 147 pages, it's a key report for a key process. The new GTLD process is not just something for a subset of ICANN. It really is of interest to most of ICANN's communities. And so the feeling is, and it's a strong feeling, that the public comment period should be the 67-day period that would, I note, let the deadline be the 6th of December for the final report. That would actually make it in time for the 7th December final document deadline. It's important for the community to get involved with this process as early as possible so as not to end up having questions being asked later on in the game. I think it's important that we, in the interest of openness and giving the ability for all stakeholders to carefully consider the report and to continue and contribute to the process as early as possible, to go for that longer length of public comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Olivier. I'll just go straight to Brett next.
Thank you, Jonathan. I think we as counselors understand the purpose of the issue report very well. I think there's possibly a trap, though, for people who know the procedures less well than we do, which is viewing this as an opportunity to advocate particular policy outcomes or try to shape what the policy outcomes are going to look like in the PDP. I think it's important to remind people in our constituencies, and especially people from outside the GNSO, the GAC, the ALAC perhaps, the ALAC probably knows very well this process also, but people outside, that this is really just an issue report, and that the purpose here is to make sure we're on the right track. As I see it, it's sort of a quick look for completeness and accuracy. Not a place to dig deep down into the policy outcomes. So I think when people look at it that way, the comment is perhaps less daunting than it seems. We're going to have plenty of time on the other side in 2016 to debate the merits of the various outcomes. So just want that to be in the front of everyone's mind as we move forward.
Thanks, Brett. And that's an interesting point, and it makes me then think of the position of the council in all of this, because we, of all people, should be familiar with the process and the purpose of each step in the PDP. So I think it's very useful to remind of that point. Let me go to Marie.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. This is Marie speaking for the transcript. I think that this issue was really heavy and complex for staff, and it will probably be heavy and complex for our communities to digest as well, especially considering that we have many parallel issues that are draining resources from us. We had a call from the NCSG 2 days ago when we informally discussed this matter, and there is a general feeling in the community that an extension would be welcome. We talked about 60 days, but I think that we would have no problem with 67. And our feeling is based on the fact that we very much welcome the organization of a session about this in the upcoming meeting in Dublin, as has been suggested by staff. And I think that if we decide earlier that the extension would be conceded, we would have more time to program for this session, to find a slot in which it does not compete to many other sessions, and to mobilize our communities to participate. So I think that at least for us, we are in the position to agree with an extension right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Maria. Amr, go ahead.
Thanks. This is Amr. First, I'd like to thank Brett for pointing out the purpose of the issue report, and that is something important to keep in mind, because we're not actually going. The community is not meant to submit a public comment on a policy document. This is just a document to sort of scope out the issues and and folks need to just be sure that all the issues that need to be discussed once or if a PDP is launched, then everything is there. But having said that, I do agree with a lot of the views coming forward before by Marilia, Olivier, and Phil. From an NCSG perspective, I would just like to say that there are a number of open public comment periods that we are having, or that we're struggling to sort of draft comments on and have those reviewed and approved. And this also eats into some of the time we can spend on reviewing this document, even just from an issue scoping perspective. So having said that, I think I would also be in favor of an extension. I realize that an extension might mean quite a lengthy one, especially if we want to go down the 67-day route. I think that's reasonable in terms of not wanting to have a deadline too close to an ICANN meeting. But I'm also not very sure why we need to have another council discussion on this at some point, except when we're actually discussing adoption of the final issues report and launching a PDP. One final point is that if the final report is actually delivered, the final issues report is actually delivered on December 6th, and we will have one day for a motion to be submitted for the deadline on December 7th, that still gives us a tight window to review the final issues report, and folks who are pushing for the 67-day period should be aware of that. So I'm thinking maybe a 60-day public comment period might be better. Gives us a little more time to submit the motion on the final issues report and have a chance to sort of look over it before we look at this on council. Thanks.
Thanks, Sahar. Donna?
Thanks, Jonathan. Notwithstanding that I think a 40-day public comment is probably my preference for which way we'd want to go on this, given that there's been extensive work already done on this through the discussion group, I just want to make a point on the 60 versus 67 days. I think I prefer 60 days. That gives staff a little bit of extra time in terms of pulling the report together. As Steve said, they require a 30-day period for finalising the report, but I don't want to see that push out, have to be pushed out, so that we actually miss that timeframe for considering the report in December. So I think I'd prefer a 60-day timeline, and that gives staff, I think if I've got the numbers correctly, 37 days to get that final report finalised, because I'm concerned that, you know, we started this process with thinking that this issues report would be available on the 8th of August, and we had a request to push that out because of the volume of work involved. If we extend this for another 60-day period, the consequence of that could be that we have more detailed comments, which make it more challenging for staff to sift through those and work it through. So I understand, you know, Phil's made the point that nothing's going to happen in this arena for quite some period of time. But the more we push these dates out, the longer that, time frame becomes. And I think we should respect process to the extent that we can in terms of identified timelines. I think we're setting an unfortunate precedent if we allow slippage on a regular basis, particularly on this issue. And I do understand that there's other, everyone has resourcing issues at the moment because the amount of work going on, but we also need to be conscious of paying some attention to the process that has been developed over a period of time for very good reasons. So, Jonathan, I think in summary, if we are going down the path of 60 versus 60 days, 67 days, let's aim for 60. That gives staff a little bit more time to finalise that report.
Thanks, Donna, for yours and to everyone else who contributed what feels like a pretty high-quality discussion there. That's useful. What I think I've heard, and I hope you'll agree, is that
there is a relative balance of views between extending and not extending. And so we have a potential decision to make there. And in order to make that as a council, we need to put that to a vote. I propose to you that that vote, that motion, is simple and short, and it doesn't take up a lot of council time next time. And it simply offers the council the opportunity to put a position to staff to have a 40-day, to retain the 40-day public comment period, or extend it to 60 days. And so we'll be essentially voting to extend to 60 days or not. And that feels like it represents the balance of views to me. And we should do that at the next meeting. And I would encourage everyone in then representing this issue to their groups to go back and listen to the audio over this period, because it feels like there were some high-quality points made for both. And it's really worth thinking about it properly again and just making sure that when we form our views with our respective groups, we've heard what others have said about it. So that feels like the right way to go. And I propose to you we get a motion. Can I have someone who volunteers to make that motion, assuming there are no disagreements with that approach? And then that can be drafted quickly, and I'm sure will help with the drafting. It's a very simple motion. Motion to for a council position to extend to 60 days or not, and we can pick this up on this. But if anyone would like to volunteer to be the maker of that motion, all the better. Okay. Please disagree with me if you think that's an unfair summary of things, but it feels to me like that represents the discussion. And seeing no one challenging that, we'll go forward with that approach, and we'll move on to item 5 then. Thank you, Steve. Thanks, staff, and thank you all for decent quality discussion on that item. The next item deals with a letter from Steve Crocker to the council. It was addressed to me, but it's really asking the GNSO to consider and be sure to deal with a point on a specific point, really, which is this issue around generic strings, TLDs, and registry, and the GAC view that exclusive registry access for generic strings should serve a public interest goal, and I guess therefore if it doesn't, they shouldn't be permitted. So the question that seems to be being asked is, very specifically, the NGP says that the GNSO include the issue of exclusive registry access for generic strings serving a public interest as part of our policy work. Now, I understand we have included that as part of the preliminary issue report that we've just discussed. It does deal with it. The question is, I guess, and I think we could usefully write back to Steve and say, and the NGPC board, the ICANN board, and say, look, we do intend to deal with it, and it's here. The question is that just a simple reply like that, or is there something more clarity we should be seeking? For example, are we satisfied that we have sufficient definition of public interest? Is it clear to us in developing this, or do we need to ask where in the community that's being dealt with? Any thoughts or comments on this issue? I know we've had a little discussion online. I know James Ladell made a point, and James, you may want to come in on this already.
Hi, this is Tomer. Jonathan, did you give me the cue to go ahead?
Yes, Tomer, I did.
Thank you. The public interest bit is kind of what sticks out for me. If this is going to be, as I've said before, I have no objection to adding items to an issues report. Because again, this is not a policy document. This is just a document to scope out all the issues and make sure that they are addressed once the PP begins. So I have no problem doing that. But I guess what I would like to see is because, of course, now a PDP working group charter or a draft of that charter would be included as part of the final issues report. What I would like to see is that the term the public interest, not be sort of just a standardized as a term. It needs to be discussed. If we are going to discuss this, if the PDP working group is going to discuss this within the context of public interest, then there needs to be an argument about why this is in the public interest, if it is at all. So it's just about how it's sort of how it's placed, how the context is sort of set up for that. I'm also not exactly clear why the ICANN board is sending this letter to the GNSO council. I'm guessing if anyone wants to include something in the final issues report, would like to point out something needs to be included to be discussed by a PDP working group, they could probably just go ahead and submit it to the public comment forum. I'm not sure what our role is in sort of agreeing to this or responding to the board. But that's all for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Amar. I guess my speculation is that the board has an open item on its agenda from that GAC communique April 2013 and believes that it can close that item off its agenda by submitting this to us. Just for the record, so that we are aware, and maybe one or more of you in the queue interfirm this in any event, this issue is covered in the preliminary issue report. The question is, for me, is twofold, is how, if at all, should we respond in some way to the board letter, and it's really about what the content of that response is and making sure we give a good response.
Thanks, Jonathan. James speaking. And, yeah, I think you touched on it there at the end, which is that, I think my question when this came up, and this was a couple months ago, was, what's the intent or the motive for sending this letter that we're not seeing? Is it coming from the heads of the GAC and the GAC advice that still remains undone, or is it coming up as part of the NGPC agenda? I think that the specific request to add this issue to the issue report for subsequent rounds is probably, in my opinion, fairly harmless. But I think that if a response is warranted, then we should simply reference that inclusion in the initial report. And then, just thinking out loud here, should we treat this letter from the board as a comment, a pre-comment to that initial report? Because it does sound like they are asking that something be specifically included in that document. And it seems like if it's not there, we should add it. And if it is there, then we should acknowledge as such. Thanks.
Thanks, James. I guess without being flippant about this, we could, in response, if the board suggests that they put this on record as part of their public comment, as part of the public comment process, and that would record it in that context as well. Olivier.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Olivier Capanabalon speaking on behalf of the ALAC. And the ALAC has discussed this issue previously. There was no consensus on the ALAC about this specific issue, and people feel very strongly in both directions. So I'm afraid we're not going to be able to let you know. At the moment, we have no preference. Thank you.
Sorry, Olivier, could you clarify no preference respect to?
Sorry for being ambiguous. So Olivier Capanablon speaking. Yeah, no preference with regards to those, as far as the topic is concerned, the strings representing generic terms, exclusive registry access, and the letter from the GAC, the Beijing communique that deals with this. So as a result, when it comes down to asking for this issue to be specifically dealt with in the work preparing for the subsequent rounds of the new GTLD program, I'm unable to let you know whether there is a strong interest or no interest on the ALAC for this to be included or not. As I said, some of our members believe that it's an actual waste of time to be discussing this. And some think that it's very important and it's a matter of public interest. So,
thanks. That's clear and helpful. Thank you, Olivia. Heather?
Thank you, Jonathan. Heather Farr speaking. I wanted to pick up on, Jonathan, your specific question. Should we be dealing with this question of what is the public interest? I wanted to raise concern. I'm afraid I'm raising a question without an answer or raising a problem without a solution. But I wanted to raise concern about the various contexts in which we are discussing this concept of the public interest within ICANN, within the environment. It seems that the GAC is looking at this, at the notion of public interest in various contexts. We are now proposing looking at the concept of public interest in different contexts, and it concerns me that we have these parallel discussions that aren't truly harmonized and that we end up with a very dog's breakfast form of what we all understand public interest to mean. Thanks, Jonathan.
I mean, one way in which we could work with that is to, in our response to the board, is acknowledge that this is part of the preliminary issues report, but nevertheless, we have concerns over the use of the term interest, and to the extent that there is a harmonized view developing or developed on this, the board would like to understand what the board's view is on that. Donna?
Thanks, Jonathan. Donna Austin. So I have a slightly different question in relation to this letter. So this advice came out in April 2013, so almost 2.5 years ago. And this GAC advice has actually put on hold a number of applicants, and there are still about, I'm not sure, there's up to six that still fall into this category. There were a larger number of applicants that were impacted by this advice, but they chose to change their application to be not in conflict with this advice. So we still have, some applicants that went through the 2012 new GTLD round impacted by this advice. And I guess my question is, why didn't the board come to the council earlier and say, is this GAC advice inconsistent with the current policy? I guess my concern is that there are, I think there was a contention resolution associated with Dot Food recently, and that applicant is actually in this category. So according to the board resolution on this issue, that applicant can't move forward. They will be deferred until the second round, pending the outcome of this subsequent discussion on policy. But I would have thought it would have been more appropriate to consider this in light of the policy that currently exists, given that is the process under which the applicants that are currently affected have actually submitted their application. So that's my question. I don't, disagree that, absolutely this can be discussed in the second round, but this has actually had an implication for applicants through the current round that are on hold because of it. So I guess it's a procedural question. Why didn't they come to the council earlier to see whether it's consistent with the current policy or inconsistent and how that could be dealt with? Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Donna. That's an interesting new point, and whilst I can't answer that, what we could do, of course, is in responding to Steve and the ICANN board's letter on this, is make that point that, we note that this issue is raised with the council more than 2 years after the GAC communique, and we would have appreciated it being raised sooner in the way in which you described. So that's one option there. Susan?
Susan Calabucci for the record. I'm very concerned with this and do feel that we should almost push back with the board and say thank you for the public comment, you know, we'll include it, or and continue that with, oh, this issue is included. But this statement in general is so loaded and then needs lots of clarity. So, you know, I agree with the earlier comments about public interest, but also generic terms. This one statement alone could generate discussion for months. And so I would not want to have this letter and our actions give this statement more weight than the community discussion as a whole on this issue, because we've seen, as Donna's pointed out, there's been so much. This has already impacted a lot of applicants, and so we need to be very careful and really dig deep on both of those terms, in my opinion, generic terms and public interest.
Susan, that's interesting, and it makes it adds to the challenge of how we respond to this. So I'm just sort of processing that and thinking about it. Volker, go ahead. No audio yet, Volker?
Sorry, I had to turn off my mute. Two quick points, I think. First of all, I think the public issue, interest issue is a bit of a mousetrap. It's a very hard topic to define because everybody has a different opinion of what the public interest is. Governments certainly have a different opinion on it than, for example, civil liberties groups have, user groups have, IP interests have. Everybody has a very concrete image of what the public interest should mean, but that does not necessarily mean that they match up. And if we delve down that hole, we risk having a very, very long discussion that may end nowhere. Second topic is, yes, I agree, it is a problem that we already have applications that meet this description, but I would very much suggest that in our response to the board that we recommend that the current applications and the applications in the second round be treated the same way, i.e. wait till the second round applications at least the path forward has been determined on how to treat these in the second round, because otherwise a decision now would also imply that applicants in the second round might have a route to argue that ICANN has already done this in the past and they would be eligible for the same treatment in the future as well, even though the rules have changed. That's basically what I wanted to say.
Hi, this is Amr. Just wanted to voice a lot of agreement on what Volker just said regarding different groups having different views on what is and isn't in the public interest. And that really is why I think that this is, I mean, if this being a part of the issues report and part of the PDP, I think it is important that the PDP working group have the opportunity to discuss the nuances of this and that it shouldn't in any way be predetermined. Just wanted to voice that and agree with Volker. Thanks.
Thanks. I must say I'm slightly challenged as to how to respond here because we've got quite a spectrum of thoughts and responses. So it feels to me like we have to say something. There's some quite important suggestions being made. Perhaps the only answer is to produce a draft response and then get some feedback on list on it. I can't see how else we do this, but certainly just to the point that Volker made, I mean, my sense is that the precedent isn't being set because no decision is being made unless
applicants of so-called generic strings revoke their exclusivity criteria, they are unable to proceed and are forced into the next round, whereupon they I guess the assumption is that they will get equivalent treatment. But a couple more, and we'll probably have to try bring this section to a close. Go ahead, Colin.
It's just in terms of what the draft should include, I think it should include the fundamental issue of the category, generic terms, but it should also address what has happened so far and how many people are waiting and how we are going to deal with that in the future, the procedural aspect. I think if we want to answer, we have to include these both sides. It's just a suggestion for the draft. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Amar?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Just Amar again. Regarding a way forward, I would like to also to point out that the GAC GNSO consultative group, which is working on a pilot phase for the issue scoping phases of a policy development process of the GNSO. According to this pilot project that we've got going on, that any previous GAC advice should that is relevant to an issues report for a potential PDP should be included and taken into consideration of. So I think what the board is asking here is pretty much consistent with what the GNSO Council and the GAC have been discussing. And so as in terms of a way forward, if they're asking that the Beijing communique items pertinent to this PDP are included in the issues report, then sure, I don't see why not. But I would just also again stress that the specifics of how this is approached and handled needs to be determined by the PDP working group, not by the GNSO Council, and not by by ICANN staff and when drafting the issues report and the draft charter for the PDP working group. Thanks.
So is it the case that perhaps there's just a simple response that goes and says, yes, this is going to be part of the work, but we note the challenges in the terminology used and to the extent that, you know, we note there are challenges in the terminology used in, by the virtue of the use of the word generic strings and public interest, and we will, you know, maybe that's the way to handle it. James?
Yeah, hi, Jonathan. James speaking, and I agree that's probably the best approach. And I would add, to what you just said, I would add the suggestion that we say, and if the board has further ideas or inputs on how we can, you know, make decisions or establish or operationalize what a public interest goal is, how that's defined, and how it should be served, that we would welcome that kind of feedback into the public comment on the issues report and on some of the other work on the subsequent rounds PDP. Because I think they do, at least what I'm hearing today, is that they pose a lot of open-ended questions, and perhaps we can sort of mirror that back in our response by noting that that's exactly what we are hoping to shake out in the you know, in this comment period and in the work to come. But I think we also have to put a marker down, like Donna was saying, about this is still, we still have some applications that are stuck, you know, from the 2012 round, and we need to figure out how to proceed on those.
Okay. Thanks, James. I suppose I'll go back to my earlier point. My understanding is they are stuck, but I won't say anything. That they are stuck in and best going to appear in a future round. Stephanie?
Yes, hi. Stephanie Perrin for the record. I don't like to sound like I'm punting the problem, but I think this is an occasion where if we are going forward on the on the scoping of what public interest means, and you'll notice I'm avoiding definition because I don't think we'll ever get there. I think all we'll be able to do is scope the parameters. A research report would be very useful. Now, maybe that's being done by ICANN staff. If so, a public discussion about such a research report would be, because it strikes me right off the bat that globally the term is different in different courts and different legal systems, and this promises to be a very difficult discussion. I do agree, maybe the time has come when it at least has to be corralled somehow. We can't continue on with the cases being blocked, but let's not underestimate how difficult this will be. We can't just come up with something glib that works in one jurisdiction. Thanks. So the recommendation was a research report in case that got lost in all of that.
Thanks, Stephanie. I understand there is some staff work going on this in the background. I think what I'm hearing is a couple of things. We certainly need to reply to Steve and the board, and I should draft a response quickly. I think we should limit the scope of that response. We need to become, a PDP in itself. We need a relatively brief response, which there seemed to be some support for earlier, but that does flag the challenges. And then we need to and then understand where those challenges are going to be dealt with. I don't know if anyone from staff has any information on what work is going on the public interest work. Marika notes in the chat that there was a strategy panel previously. Marika, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
This is Marika. I know that within staff, it's Nora Abusita that's responsible for that project, so I'm happy to reach out to her and see if she's able to provide an update either in writing ahead of the next council meeting or maybe join in the council meeting so that people can hear a little bit more about what is happening or being planned with regards to that topic, which may also help inform indeed how it fits within the new GTLD conversation on this topic.
I think that would be helpful, and we could even make reference to that in the reply to the board. Stephanie, is that a new hand? All right, then I think that's what we'll do. I will draft a relatively short reply. I'm sure there's been quite a lot of discussion here. I'm sure it won't satisfy all of you. If anyone else would like to make a first go at it, by all means, let me know. If I don't hear any volunteers, then I will make an attempt to draft it and get that amongst you. And we can try and capture a relatively short response, and we'll look forward to hearing back from Nora via Marika as to what she can do to inform us of whatever's going on the public interest side of things as well. That'll be useful. Next topic then is to move us on through the agenda is the work on the IGO acronyms, protection of IGO acronyms at the second level, and in particular on the work that's going on regarding something that Philip was going to follow up on. And so I think I'll just hand it straight over to Philip to bring us up to speed any developments or updates at this stage and assisted by Mason and Mary if necessary. And then we can take it from there.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm reporting now my capacity as co-chair of the IGO CRP working group. We have made zero progress since the Buenos Aires meeting. We've been akin to a sailing ship stuck in a dead calm in the horse latitudes. And this is unfortunate because our working group had made very rapid progress up to now with a tremendous amount of consensus. The reason we've been stuck in place is because the last remaining major issue involves an understanding of the accepted scope of sovereign immunity for IGOs, and we've been waiting on identification of some legal experts who can advise on this, us on this, and securing some funds for ICANN to pay for that legal input. Staff has, and some of the members of the working group have helped in identifying some candidates for who have expertise in this area. We've secured some funds commitments from ICANN. It's not clear yet whether it will be sufficient to get the input we need, but we had only one call during the summer to discuss something, which I'll get to in a minute. We have scheduled another call for next Wednesday of the working group in which we're going to consider the candidates that have been identified to provide expertise on this topic. We'll discuss their backgrounds and their price quotes and hopefully choose someone. We anticipate that it would take a minimum of 30 days once hired for an expert to respond to the detailed questions we have prepared and agreed to as a working group on this issue. And so that would mean at best we would receive that report very shortly before the Dublin meeting, although there's a chance it may not arrive until after Dublin, depending on both the time it takes to decide on the expert, get the contract signed and the funding forwarded, and for them to turn out the report. Now, the other thing that's occurred, which was the reason for the call we held a few weeks ago of the working group, is that the co-chairs had been advised by staff early in July that there would be some meeting of the GAC and the IGOs with some people from the board in Paris the same week as those other meetings in Paris to discuss IGO issues. Generally, Petter and I were told we were free to attend, but there was no travel support available, which as a practical matter, given airfare and cost of staying in Paris in the summer, made it impractical for us to even consider it. Toward the end of July, we received a copy of a letter sent by the head of the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, to FADI, informing him that some IGOs still unidentified, the GAC, some GAC members, and some board members and staff had worked out some comprehensive solution on IGO issues, which they hoped the council would look at, which we found rather disconcerting. We knew that some IGO issues were still before the NGPC as they relate to the new TLDs, but we didn't understand the board or staff to have any authority on IGO issues beyond that, certainly not for incumbent TLDs. We did have, now I should say, Petter and I had a good meeting with Thomas Schneider and two GAC vice chairs one morning in Buenos Aires. The GAC has been much more forthcoming and willing to engage with our working group than the IGOs have. But we've been asking for a month now to have a call to brief us on exactly what they had been decided on in Paris, and we have yet to get that call scheduled due to August vacations and other things. So that's where things stand. We are close to securing the legal expertise we need to produce a expert report on the scope of IGO sovereign immunity, which is a the critical issue we need to understand to reach finality on in our own work. There's this other agreement reached. We don't know how much detail there is in it in Paris by certain IGOs and GAC members with the board and staff. I have alerted Jonathan and the vice chairs of the council of my concern about those Paris recommendations, that to the extent they are at odds with whatever our working group may come up with in the end, and as well as being a proposal created outside the normal PDP process, that it could set up some considerable conflict on this issue. But that's where we're at, and we are glad that our working group will be able to move forward and hopefully select a legal expert to be hired next week, and we await the scheduling of a call between Petter and I with the people who met in Paris on IGO issues to at least get some more detailed description of exactly what type of agreement they came to. But that meeting now happened more than 6 weeks ago, and we still are in the dark on it. So that concludes my report. I'd be happy to take any questions and engage in any discussion.
Thanks, Philip. Notwithstanding the concerns over the sort of nature of the Paris meeting and so on, is there really no who is anyone assisting you to schedule the meeting, or how do you propose to just practically get that information and get that understanding? Have you got staff support helping you?
Yes, both Mary Wong and Steve Chan, who are our main staff support of the working group, have been reaching out to try to get that call scheduled. It was not, my understanding is that it was not able to be scheduled in August because of vacation schedules of Thomas Schneider and other principals who engaged in that meeting, and my understanding is that there's a good chance it'll be scheduled very shortly, and be ideal if it was able to take place before our working group call next Wednesday, although time is getting short in that regard. But Petter and I have been broadly available throughout the past 6 weeks since we got advised of the outcome of that Paris meeting.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks. Any other comments, questions for Philip at this stage? Mary, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, Phil. Not a question, but more of a follow-up to Phil, and I think I've said this before, so apologies if I'm repeating myself too much, but what Phil was talking about was obviously the work of the Curative Rights PDP Working Group, and so this is just a reminder that in respect of the broader context and some of the other issues around the protection of IGO names and acronyms, that what we're expecting to come back from the group of IGOs that Philip mentioned is a proposal that covers both the curative aspects, which we presume would then be forwarded to the group that he and Petter are chairing to discuss, as well as what we've conveniently, I guess, termed the more preventative types of protection, which, as you all know, is the subject of recommendations that came out of a prior GNSO PDP working group, which was chaired by Thomas Rickard. And I mention this because of two things. One is obviously to complete the picture, especially for newer councillors, but secondly also to remind the council that in respect of the so-called preventative aspects, this was the subject of an NGPC request as well as a subsequent discussion with and to the council. And so the expectation there is that the request will stay the same. In other words, that the council may be asked to consider whether the GNSO would be amenable to changing its previously adopted recommendations on those aspects. And the last thing I would like to say on that is that obviously we've been very focused on the IGO acronym issue, but those outstanding preventative protections that the NGPC had previously talked to the council about also encompass a certain number of names of the Red Cross movement, for example, which are currently the subject of temporary interim protections. So there's nothing at this point for the council to act on except to await the proposal from the GAC IGO small group. My understanding from the Paris meeting is that it's basically going to be a more detailed proposal that builds on the initial NGPC proposal that was sent to the GAC and the GNSO more than a year ago now. So again, just a reminder, a placeholder, and I guess we'll see in terms of timing when the actual proposal comes in. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, Mary. And again, Mary and Steve have been tremendously helpful, as always. But I do want to respond briefly, I did mention in my own presentation that we're aware that the NGPC has other pending IGO issues other than curative rights process. Again, NGPC is new GTLD program committee in terms of implementation details, no authority to make policy for incumbent TLDs, whereas we've been trying in our working group to come up with a comprehensive proposal for both new and incumbent TLDs. And again, my concern in particular, a gentleman from the OECD sat in on our working group meeting in Buenos Aires and made clear in informal comments afterwards, face-to-face discussions, that they regard their sovereign immunity as absolute and want a new CRP that does not provide registrants with any access to national courts. Our working group is not going to take any position on that until we get objective legal input. But it, to the extent that whatever comes out of that Paris recommendation would apply to incumbent TLDs and would be at odds with whatever legal advice we may receive and ultimate decisions we may make as a working group, there is potential conflict there. And hopefully there won't be, but we felt we had to flag that for the council and make them aware of the possibility.
Thank you, Philip and Mary. I think we can consider ourselves well-briefed and forewarned, and hopefully this situation can be reconciled. It is clearly of concern and unorthodox in various ways. Let's look forward to you achieve that update on this so-called Paris meeting, and let's hear where we go from there. All right. Next item is an update on the work of the Data and Metrics for Policymaking Working Group. It's been working for some time, and we have opportunity to get insight into the potential issues in the final report presented to us here by Jonathan Zook, who has kindly provided his time and availability to brief us. So let's go ahead and hear from you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jonathan, for having me in the meeting. And you have a very full agenda, so I won't take up a lot of your time. We're in the middle of our public comment period on our draft recommendations, and I've received some interesting input and still expect to hear from the registries, registrars, DC, and IPC before the public comment period is done. Presumably somebody's driving the slide, so maybe I can say next slide. And I guess next slide. So the task of the DMPM working group was to look at how data could be better incorporated into the policy development process and at what stages and to what ends. And so the working group worked on a few different areas, and specifically improving the use of data in issue identification and scoping. A problem's been identified, use data wherever possible to figure out how big or significant that problem is so that the issue could be prioritized in the working group calendar. No time is that more important than this coming year with 7 reviews coming up, so we may be talking about review teams more than working groups this coming year. Key performance metrics for recommended policies. So, in other words, using data as a way to define the success or the objectives of the policy recommendations that are being made. And then, finally, using data to assess whether or not the policy recommendations had their desired outcome. So this is sort of along the lines of continuous improvement and reviewing policy recommendations for their efficacy. Next slide. So the opportunities for data and policy development, we think we can help to evolve the ICANN culture to be better informed, fact-based policy development, help ensure that the most critical registrant-registry and registrar issues are addressed, facilitate deliberations and decisions based on tangible evidence as opposed to gut feeling or anecdotal evidence, and promote continuous improvement to policy based on measured outcomes. So, I mean, these are basically the objectives, and as we went through and looked at some case studies in the past, we saw areas where data could have brought about more informed decision-making and the opportunity for performance measurement of the recommendations downstream after implementation. And so that's where how we identify these opportunities. Next slide. Yes, I see, James, I see your comment in the chat, and that's exactly right. These data could be used as part of continuous improvement to either refine the recommendations, repeal the recommendations, and set new ones, et cetera. That's the whole point, is to see if the recommendations are having the desired outcome and make a course change if they aren't. So we talk about data and metrics sometimes interchangeably, so we just have a little definition saying the data is the values that are out there. Statistics and metrics are basically measurements of that data that we define use to define the problem or the success of the recommendations. Next slide. So we have seven recommendations that we have in our draft report. The first one is a kind of pilot effort to where we're asking the council to set aside a small budget to be available to stakeholder groups, constituencies, and working groups so that they can submit requests for data on pressing naming-related issues so that, you know, if the IPC is questioning the efficacy of the Trademark Clearinghouse, for example, it might be worthwhile to look at URS data, you know, as compared to trademark registrations. So it's, you know, so that there can be a sense of whether or not there was a delta in that as a result, you know, of trademark clearinghouse use. And so it's fairly simple statistical analysis that we're talking about, not huge studies like the HUA's accuracy study or a new survey of data, but more getting at requesting data from registries and registrars that they may have already collected or from an outside source that they've been collecting and make available for sale. The money might be used to anonymize data that's otherwise sensitive, et cetera. But the idea is data on which a working group would have the expertise to perform the statistical analysis. Probably no more than five proposals would be selected. The idea would be to look at the data requests, how the information is managed, and how the data got used by that working group, whether it is to try and bring about a new PDP, or to prevent one because it was determined that the facts didn't support the theory. And then hopefully as a result of this, adjustments are made to the request processes. We'll look at establishing some success criteria for the pilot. But it's basically in whether or not data requests were effective in gaining the data that was requested and what improvements would be necessary for a final budget recommendation that would be made in the next budget cycle. So it's about looking at issue identification and the chartering process, as Barry said. So I can stop here and take a question or go through these and then go back and take questions. Jonathan, what would you prefer?
Jonathan, I think carry on, but if hands do build up in the chat, feel free to stop and respond to any either questions written in the chat or hands up on the in the Adobe Connect room.
All right, sounds good. So next slide. So second recommendation is that the GNSO direct staff to make updates to the GNSO Policy Development Process Manual. That updates existing text to the early outreach in regards to audience scope and quantitative input. So there are portions of the operating procedures manual that talk about early outreach to gain information when developing the issue report, and there are areas specific to audience scope, in other words, who should be to whom staff should reach out, if I can say that properly without the hanging participle, and then also the use of quantitative information wherever necessary. So again, it may be a case where staff is making a data request or a data purchase in order to better frame the issue in the issue report. So that is the second recommendation. Next slide. The next recommendation is that we recommend the GNSO direct staff to create and publish new templates of the issue report, charter, and final report templates as linked to from the working group guidelines. So again, the idea here is to update the existing templates to incorporate the use of quantitative analysis in each of them, so that each of these things has a template, as you are all aware, now that are used when people create a new charter or a final report. And the idea is to add some sections related specifically to data and to continuous improvement to those document templates, so that each working group will have to make them part of the analysis that they do when they're creating their charter or their final outputs and final recommendations. Next slide. The work group recommends to the GNSO direct staff to add a template recommendation that outlines any future working group recommendations, include an additional recommendation that measures whether the policy change produced the intended effect. As part of the prior recommendation to create work product templates, the charter template work should be updated to reflect the change. And so, again, this is sort of what procedural looking, but the idea is that we want to build into the policy development process a time frame and a set of metrics associated with measuring the success of those recommendations post-implementation. So the idea is that from the very beginning, from the charter stage and ultimately in the final report, there would be a time frame and a set of metrics wherever possible that would be used to measure the success of the recommendations. And as James suggested, allow for mid-course corrections later on if the intended outcomes are not occurring. Next slide. The work group recommends the GNSO direct staff, as part of prior work product template recommendations, to import the same template recommendations, the final report template. And so, again, this is very specific, but it's about the template for the final report and making sure to include in the final report the notion of continuous improvement and checking back on the success of the recommendations of the work group. Next slide. And then the recommendation six is to incorporate a metrics request decision tree and form. So the work group put together a kind of a data request template that could be used by a working group to request data for their deliberations, and a kind of process flow diagram or flow chart that would be used to determine how data was requested and how data would be treated. So if, for example, data was requested from a registrar and the registrar had a particular objection, for example, that the data was business sensitive or contained competitive information, what to do next, which would be to look into ways for anonymizing the data so that it wouldn't have those same competitive effects. So that decision tree is would be built into the policy development process manual. And next slide. And then, again, the metrics request decision tree and the metrics request form would be imported in the working group guidelines as well. And so, again, these are very specific recommendations about how the GNSO could direct staff to make these changes to very specific documents. Again, the idea being to provide as many tools as possible for working groups to request data and to overcome challenges to those data requests, whether they have to do with budget or the sensitivity of the data. And next slide. So this is where we are on the timeline. We are in the middle of the, or maybe not the middle, there's only about 6 days left in the public comment period. As I said, we're expecting generally supportive comments from registries, registrars, IPC and DC. We will go over them in detail and present the final report and hopefully submit this to you very shortly in order to be in time for the next vote. So the public comment closes on the 7th of September, and we hope to submit a final report to you very shortly after that. Next slide.
Jonathan, that's a very useful heads up and preparation for where this is heading and gives us the opportunity to be well prepared and actually hopefully not need to then defer this, but to be able to make a decision on it at the meeting at which it comes up. So I'd encourage everyone to share this information with their respective groups so that you're aware of this and we can process it as rapidly as reasonably possible when it does come in final form before the council. Are there any other questions or comments for Jonathan? Okay, good. Well, thank you for your presentation, obviously, Jonathan, and thank you to the councillors who responded during the chat and kept up to speed with it and gave the feedback there.
My pleasure.
I look forward to receiving the report, and we should be in a good position to do that.
And feel free to
cross you there, John.
On the way. Thank you very much.
Okay, so that puts us in a position to hear an update on we've slightly run out of time. Normally, I hadn't realized we had missed over a relatively substantive item here, or at least that I had. We've still got to hear from Thomas Rickett on the latest on the CCWG accountability. Thomas, I'm sorry I've left us, given that we want to hear a few minutes from Volker on preparations from Dublin, a relatively short amount of time. I know you were up very late last night. I was amazed that you were able to do the call with the board at midnight your time, but maybe you want to give us data as to where you are in your public comment and in particular anything that's come out of the interaction with the board last night or any other thoughts you have on the progress and work of the CCWG on accountability.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. And I had written in the chat, I'm not in the Adobe, so I can't see whether there are any hands raised, but I'm sure that you will be able to help me with managing the queue if need be. As you know, we are in the midst of our public comment period. The public comment period is going to close on the 12th of September. So I repeat my encouragement to everyone on the call to file comments to indicate their support or concerns with this proposal that we've published. While we are conducting the public comment period, we continue our work. So we are having weekly two-hour calls continuously, and we're particularly focusing on the things that we can do while waiting for the community to form its opinion. There's work going on with respect to the human rights topic that has been raised and that we're trying to address for our final report or for the completion of our report. So this is all work in progress. So I think it would be premature to give trends or other information stemming from the public comments that we received. You rightfully pointed out that there is an interaction going on with the board. So the board is investing a lot of time into the analysis and response to our report. So there have been multiple meetings by board members and by a board caucus. There's been a two-day workshop, if I'm not mistaken, sometime last week, and then meetings with the full board. So the board is currently forming its views, and we have suggested to have a closer interaction with the board in order to ensure that there is no friction between the board and the CCWG and that we have the same level of information and jointly work towards the common goal of making the transition happening. So in that spirit, we conducted a board briefing, which took place on Monday this week, 90 minutes, where we provided the board with first-hand information about what we are doing in our report, and where we gave the board members the opportunity to ask questions, and we responded to them. Then, as was planned, we had another interaction with the board, which took place at 22 o'clock UTC yesterday, for 3 hours, actually, where we gave the opportunity to the board to share its observations and concerns with our report. And, you know, so while the board was listening to us during the briefing call, we listened to the board primarily during yesterday's call. And let me say that we are very appreciative of the board having followed our suggestion not only to come up with criticism, but actually to provide alternative solutions where there is criticism. There has been considerable debate in this call yesterday, and I think it would absorb too much time to go into details. But what I can say is that the board has reassured us that they are supportive of most parts of the report. I know that the perception of some in the group was different, but we have received an oral and written confirmation from board members that actually they do support most parts of our recommendation. There are some questions surrounding the legal vehicle that we're using for community empowerment, which is the single membership model, as you will recall, and the board has some concerns that it shared with us yesterday that this is an untested model, that it might be difficult to explain, that there are operational uncertainties that might cause instability. We have agreed that the board would provide us with written information on their analysis as well as their suggestions for an alternative vehicle, which would at the same time maintain our requirements, in particular the requirement that our group established on enforceability of the community powers, while removing the concerns that the board has. And I guess that this discussion pretty much happened in an in a spirit of collaboration, and we look forward to receiving more information from the board, which the CCWG will then analyze, and it is foreseen that we might have another three-hour call at sometime next week, and maybe even another CCWG face-to-face meeting later this month, but this is still under consideration. So I think I should pause here and open it up for questions. I'm not, again, Jonathan, I would need your assistance in managing the queue. Thank you.
I've got a couple of hands up, so I'll go straight to them. Philip first. Go ahead, Philip.
Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, Thomas, for the report and your very diplomatic characterization of the board presentation last night. I should say these are my personal views. We're going to have a discussion of this topic within the BC tomorrow. Just two things. One, whatever the perception, and we need to await much greater detail from the board, it does appear that they are rejecting the single-member model and proposing something different, and also have concerns about the scope and effect of the IRP, which are the two pillars of the current proposal. What I want to raise and put aside the substance and get more to procedure, the board is calling for a two-day meeting between itself and the CCWG in Los Angeles sometime later this month, which appears to many as proposing a negotiation session. I posted comments in the chat room during last night's call and also on the CCWG email list expressing concerns about that and how that such a discussion and its outcome would be integrated with the normal consideration of comments, especially as it comes during a still open comment period. on the CCWG list just less than 2 hours ago. Bruce Tonkin responded to me saying, actually, there's no reason the CCWG can't invite the wider community to come to the face-to-face. Schneider could present for the GAC, Greenberg for ALAC, et cetera. I'm condensing there. He even suggested there could be some travel funding for representatives of various groups. I think we need to all think very carefully about the proper procedure going forward, and my own view would be that if the feedback from the board results in a substantially revised proposal with something other than a single member model and a different parameters for the IRP, that would require yet another round of comment, I think, in all fairness to the community. I'll stop there, but let's wait on the substantive details, but let's think about the procedural implications of a face-to-face meeting in Los Angeles. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil, and if I may respond to that briefly, certainly this is a concern, and we have made clear that no decision was made or should have been made during yesterday's interaction with the board. This is for the CCWG to discuss, and it is imperative for us to ensure that the integrity of the process is maintained. So under no circumstances shall there be the impression that the board chimes in the 11th hour and that changes to the proposal are being made in a bilateral negotiation behind closed doors. So we are fully aware of that. We will discuss with the CCWG how to best go about with this. There is some traction inside the CCWG for having another face-to-face meeting, but certainly there are more comments that the CCWG needs to take into consideration when finalizing its report. So I think we should remain open, as we did after the first public comment period, to fully absorb what the community feedback is. And amongst that, one of the commenters will be the board. At the same time, you are correct that should there be substantial revisions of our recommendations based on the board's input, then we need to consider how to best deal with that. And it is certainly a possibility that we need to carefully consider to have another public comment period if there are substantial changes. But having said that, let me just remind everyone of the basic working principle that the CCWG has been using from the very beginning. We have established requirements for an accountability infrastructure, for accountability enhancements, and our group has been open to listening and also to changing its view if it found a solution that was better addressing or responding to the request and preventing or minimizing the risk of unintended side effects. So between the first and the second report, we changed from the old reference model to the single membership model, and I think we should remain open to whatever suggestions come from the wider community, and by community, I mean community including the board. So if the board, which admittedly we don't know at this stage, has a suggestion to make that would make us meet our requirements, but that would have other benefits to overcome our weaknesses in our current proposal, then I think we should be open to that, because our goal is to come up with the best possible solution and not only with the solution that we have at the time.
Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, Philip. I'm mindful we've hit the top of the hour, and I'm sorry I've let us run into this corner a little bit from a chair's point of view. But let's. There's a comment from Amr in the chat saying he was curious as to why the board concerns have come up at quite such a late stage in the process. And I know James has got his hand up, so I suggest we go to James, deal with James's point, and then we're going to have to wrap this item up. Go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. And just in the interest of time, I'll just note that I share a lot of Phil's concerns. I thank Thomas for his characterization of the call last night. I think a lot of people are just by gauging some of the side chats and some of the post on social media that a lot of people's heads are still spinning by the implications of what was dropped on us last night. It's early. We're still waiting for details, but adding to Phil's concerns about process and how we proceed from here, if a comment from the community points out vulnerabilities in the proposal or shortcomings or unintended consequences of our proposal, that's, I think, one matter. But substituting an entirely new model from whole cloth, I think, is something that, even if it is, to Thomas's point, has merits and is worth considering, is going to introduce significant rework and delays into the CCWG process, which, of course, is a dependent element for the CWG and the INS transition generally, and just the whole thing is going to grind to a halt here, potentially at the Dublin meeting. So I just wanted to prepare the council, for that potential outcome that we are walking into a bit of a circus here with this whole process kind of grinding to a halt while we consider this development from last night. I'm just putting that out there. My primary concern at this point is both the process and awaiting some details on the substance. Thanks.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, James. Is there anything else that you would make, Thomas, in response?
Yes, I'd just like to briefly respond to both Amar and James. Firstly, it's not for me to speak about why the board is working on this now, so I think that's for the board to respond to. But to James's point, I will surely brief council if there's any indication that we will not make it for the Dublin meeting. But as said, we have requested that the board would provide us with more detail on their thinking so that the group can deliberate on the board's views in its meeting next Tuesday. So I think we should remain calm for the moment, wait for the board's input, which I expect to be with us prior to next week's CCWG meeting, and then await the CCWG's deliberations. And after that, I will send a note to council providing an update on where we are.
Good, Thomas. Thank you very much. And again, apologies to all that things have run on to the point that they have. Amar, your hand is up very briefly, please.
Hi, this is Amar. Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, Thomas. Just wanted to mention that I when Jonathan did read out my question in the chat, I did immediately post a comment saying that that was just a general comment. It was not meant as a question towards Thomas. I did not expect Thomas to have an answer to a question on board behavior at all. So I just wanted Thomas to know that. Thank you.
Thanks, Amar. Now, I suggest that, first of all, thank you, Thomas, for that update and for the marathon session last night and what seems to be running on from that. I think we're going to have to recognize that it's 5 past the hour now and that we're going to have to pick up on the outstanding items on the list. So with your unless anyone urgently needs to cover anything, I think we'll work on the further preparation for ICANN 54 on list. We'll pick up the work on the cross-community working group and use of country and territory names with Heather on list as well, and we can defer 10.2 to the next meeting. Jay?
Very quickly, under item 10 in the order of business, I just wanted to wish our Vice Chair, Volker Greiman, a happy birthday. Thank you.
A happy birthday from all of us then.
Thank you all.
Thank you, James. And best wishes to you, Volker. All right, good. Well, that's a light-hearted note and a very positive note to finish the call. Again, I'm sorry it ran on and compressed the final items, but I do think we had some valuable LT discussions. So thanks to all of you for your participation, and we'll work hard to keep things moving in the meantime.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.